Now I'd like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and then answer any questions from the audience if time permits. Let's please all welcome Terry from
Fountain Valley.
I'm Terry, I'm an alcoholic.
Terry.
Good to be here today, good to be sober, and nice to see some faces I haven't seen in a while. Delighted. I used to travel a lot for work when I was fairly newly sober, and it reminded me of that this morning because it's cold outside, and I used to do a lot of traveling in February and March in the Midwest and the Northeast where it's really cold. So it was a little cold, a little wet, and I was walking up to a place where I really didn't know anybody or expect to see anybody I really knew, but yet I knew all of you, and I was welcomed, and I wasn't afraid or nervous or scared, and I knew I was coming to an AA meeting, and it reminded me of that. I don't know why it flashed on that. Welcome to the new people who identified. Glad you're here. I hope you can find what I found here, which was a power greater than myself that has solved my drinking problem. I would go out on a limb here and say to most of you, it's probably welcome back. I used to go to a meeting on an annual basis in Chicago where they didn't ask for newcomers. They said, is this anybody's first AA meeting? And occasionally there were people who identified, very rarely, because it's not, it's been my experience that anybody I've met that's new in Alcoholics Anonymous has been to Alcoholics Anonymous before. So welcome back. I hope you're willing to do what it takes this time. As I like to say, there's nothing to get here, there's just stuff to do. And I've been very blessed to be able to have done it consistently for a while. I don't know why it changed one day, because I came here and I wasn't willing to do anything either for a while. I've been sober now for 5,859 days, which is the longest I've ever done anything straight except breathe. I just had a birthday on the 1st of December for 16 years, and that's an absolute miracle. I'll tell you a little bit about my drinking. I grew up in the tough town on the mean streets in the hood in Irvine, yo. Yeah, exactly. West Woodbridge, yo. So my first police contact was in Woodbridge. Thank you very much for that. I'm the youngest of three kids. I had absolutely loving parents who worked very, very hard to give us what they didn't have. They were immigrants. And I had a brother and a sister who were a lot older than I was, but loved me to death and couldn't do enough for me. I was my brother's best man when I was 14. When he got married, and I was in my sister's wedding party the same year. Great family life, happy upbringing. And then when I was 12 years old, my mom had taken me and my cousin Mary back to Ireland for a little visit, and my Uncle Tom gave me a shandy, a harp shandy, and I got, it was my own, it was my first drink that somebody had given me, and it fixed me right away. For those 12 years prior to that, I didn't know I was broken. I didn't know anything was wrong, but that fixed it the minute I had it. Does that make sense to you guys? Because I immediately fell in love with the effect that was produced by that drink, and I wanted to feel that way all the time. I couldn't wait to do it again. I didn't get sick that first time. Two shandies. Shandies like mixing 7-Up and beer, if you don't know. They call it lemonade, lager and lemonade. And so it probably wasn't very strong, but I loved it. I felt like a million bucks. And my cousin Mary had a couple of drinks, and she was giddy, and we had a great time. We came back to the States, and she is not an alcoholic, and I am. amazing. So I think the effect produced was a little bit different for me. And, you know, living, that was the 70s in Irvine. It was a lot easier for me to get drunk smoking weed back in the day. You know, I wanted something that affected me from the neck up, that made me, give me that sense of ease and comfort. And, you know, if I drank a beer or two and went home, my parents could smell that. My parents had no idea what pot was, you know. Why are your eyes all red? Oh, we were in the pool all day. starting at about 12 years old, you know, I started walking down a path that was different than my brother and my sister, that was different than the way I was being raised. I always like to say that my sister is has a master's degree in education, an English literature major, befriended nuns in school, was a Catholic, still is a Catholic school teacher. My brother went to USC Business School, is the president of a medical equipment company, has an MBA, and then there's Terry. I chose a little bit different path, you know, and they're not alcoholics. They're both married to the same spouse. They married 30 plus years ago. They've raised, between the two of them, 7 kids, and all great kids, and they're upstanding members of the community. And I'm happy to say I've rejoined their ranks in the last 16 years, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. They did it with the church of our upbringing, you know, and I didn't. I drank through high school, got into a little bit of trouble, not a whole lot of trouble, and then then the 80s hit, and I was playing a little music, and I discovered some other dry goods, and my life became unmanageable on that stuff very quickly, and I identified very quickly that I had to stop snorting cocaine. Very quickly I identified that. And a person at work said, I go to Cocaine Anonymous, I'll take you there. And I said, great. So I went there with them, and I listened, and I couldn't identify, except for the fact that somebody said, well, you know, you're going to have to quit drinking too. It's like switching seats on the Titanic. And I said, thank you, got to go, bye. And I said, I'll just stop doing drugs, because drugs are bad. Okay, they're expensive, they're illegal, they're all these other things. I'm just going to drink. I'm just going to drink, because it's obvious drugs are bad. What's drinking? I've been drinking since I was 12. Not a problem, right? That was probably 21, 22 years old. And I drank. By the time I was 32 years old, I had a very estranged relationship with my mother. Every time I saw my mom, she had that look. You know the look? That look of disgust, that look of heartbreak in her eyes almost every time I saw her. My brother would barely speak to me. My sister would almost cry every time she talked to me. I had a 4-year-old child at that time, and I barely saw him because I didn't want to drink around him. So how I did that was I didn't be around him. You know, whoever the custody gal who shared, you know, I wish you luck this week. I identify with that. I almost gave away my son, almost. You know, what I did is I cut it down to about 3 or 4 hours a week that I would see him, and that was it. And I had to go when that was over, because I had to go and get it on. You know, I was obviously estranged from his mother. I had a girlfriend that I was living with, we were estranged by her choice too. She had started going to those Al-Anon meetings. Dope. That was bad news. That was bad news for Terry, because she was paying the rent and she was gone. I had no car. I the only job, I'd worked myself into a job where I was allowed and encouraged to openly drink at work, and I was unemployable in that job. You know, if you play Irish music for a living and you can't drink Irish whiskey, there's a problem. You know, there's a big problem. When you I used to go to one Irish bar to drink before I went to the other Irish bar to drink and play, and the guy who owned the second bar bought the first bar, so the jig was up. I was like, where was I going to go? Crap, you know, and you get free or cheap booze in the bar, and you still have a bottle in the truck because you can't drink enough in front of people. They'd get scared. You know, my life was a mess. My life was an absolute mess. And on Thanksgiving weekend, 1996, Thanksgiving Eve, I played a show in Aliso Viejo and got into a physical altercation with the rest of the band. That's a problem. Thanksgiving, I also got in a physical altercation with that girlfriend and a waitress and a bartender, and that's all I remember. There was probably others involved. And I came to in that place where she was paying rent and with some broken furniture, and I was wondering why she wasn't there and why she wasn't taking me to her parents' house up in Camarillo for Thanksgiving. And when she didn't return any phone calls, I was thinking, uh-oh, something happened. And that Thanksgiving Eve started to come to me. And, you know, I ended up getting picked up by that estranged spouse that I was still married to and my child and taken down to my sister's house. And I brought a bottle with me. And I had to endure those looks from the family again. And I didn't quite finish the bottle, so I took it with me when I was leaving. And I asked that woman to please go by the house so I could drop this bottle off, so I had something when I got back there, and then take me to the Goat Hill Tavern, about 8 or 9, and that's where she dropped me off. And somehow I got back to the house. I made a phone call that Friday to the same guy I'd been calling for a couple of years. And that was a really close friend of mine that we grew up together. Our families were friends. He had the same upbringing of immigrant parents. We'd known each other since we shared a crib, yo. But literally, like a crib with a baby, you know. My parents were his older brother's godparents. You know, our families went back forever. And he had gotten his third DUI by the time he was 24 years old and landed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And needless to say, after that happened and he got sober, he and I didn't hang out much from about 24 years old. His life started to go this way, and mine continued on the path it was on, and we just didn't hang out anymore until I needed help in the middle of the night occasionally. And then I wanted to hang out with him again. And he would give me the same loving answer he always gave me at 3 in the morning. And the answers got shorter after he got married, by the way, too, on those 3 a.m. phone calls. But he would give me that same answer. He'd say, "Why don't you call me in the morning?" Click. And I never did. Until that Thanksgiving weekend. And I called him on that Friday of Thanksgiving weekend, and just to get kind of get the heat off and see if she'd come back. She didn't. Saturday happened, and Saturday, I love that. I love Greg's sweatshirt when I saw that today, because my last drunk finished up on the Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend at the LA Coliseum at the USC Notre Dame football game. And that's a great place to party for an Irish kid, you know. And my sponsor, the man who became my sponsor, who was 12-stepping me, was there. Dan Mack from Tustin, some of you people know him, was there. They were both sober. They weren't in close proximity, but I told the guy that I called on Friday to ask for help. I said, "You know, I hope you don't expect me to not drink tomorrow, because I'm going to be drinking tomorrow." And he goes, "Do what you got to do." And he came by there to witness it. I was playing music for a group of about 200 drunk policemen, and it was a blast until it was time to go into the Coliseum for the game, which was kind of a secondary thing to me. Yeah, seriously, football? They're playing football here? I had a flask, and I couldn't get the whiskey in the flask. That was a very difficult task, so I had to have somebody else do it. And they had to have somebody else, so there was two people trying to get the whiskey in the flask. And Curly's heard this story a few times, and the bastards were spilling it. And I couldn't let that happen. So I cut my hands and got under it. I was doing this. And I looked up as I'm doing that, and there's the guy who's 12-stepping me and Danny Mack looking at me, and they're both kind of just laughing and shaking their heads. And I didn't know it at the time, but that was pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And it wasn't the worst I had endured. It wasn't the worst I had endured. I could go on with drunkalogs and embarrassing stories, and the time I had to call from the courthouse and get my mother get off a medical table at St. Joe's Hospital where she was undergoing tests to come and bail me out. My sister drive her over there. God, that luck. I was a taker from my family. I talk a lot about family in my shares. I was a taker from everybody I came into contact with. And it was all because I loved the effect produced by alcohol. And once I had it at 12 years old, I had to have it constantly again and again for as long, no matter what the consequences were to myself or people I said I loved. And that was the beginning of the end. There was the chaos of that night was crazy, absolutely crazy. And on December 1st, 96, I came to in that place where I hadn't been paying the rent for a while, and she was and she was gone. The front door was off the hinges this time. There was a generator in the middle of the living room, leaking gas. I was soaked in my own urine again, and something had changed that day. Something had changed, and I did pick up the phone in the morning, and I called him. I called Ronnie, and I said, I need help. And he said, well, I'm coming to get you, you know, within the hour. I'm on my way now. And like so many times before when I called him, I didn't say, well, what about next Tuesday? I didn't say, well, not today, I'm busy. I didn't say, I just said, okay. The key to me getting sober and staying sober was to say, okay. Okay. And I fell back asleep, and he, next thing you know, he was kind of, well, he wasn't really knocking on the door because it was off the hinges, but he was kind of pushing his way through, and I woke up, and he wouldn't let me in his car until I cleaned up a little bit. He had just had it detailed, and I can't say as I blame him. And he cleaned me up a little bit, and he searched the house for bottles, and I said, dude, if there was any left, do you think I would have called you? And he said, well, you don't mind if I check anyway. And I said, yeah, go ahead, knock yourself out. And he cleaned me up, and he took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was at 12:30 in Irvine, in Turtle Rock. It was a very small meeting, about six people. I think I put a 10 or a 20 or something in the basket, and all eyes looked at me and said, does anyone need change? You know, I heard what I needed to hear that morning. And I see the man who said it on a regular weekly basis to this day, a guy named Don B. From Mission Viejo. I'd shared it a few times in meeting that Don said something that made me stay and want to keep coming back and shared something that let me know I was home. And he often was trying to think of what spiritual, you know, nugget he had thrown out there, what words of wisdom he had thrown out there. And it was the fact that he used to take hefty trash bags and cut them and then lay them underneath his sheet because he got tired of ruining mattresses that he wet the bed almost every night as an adult man. And that's what I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous on that first day that let me know I was home. It's a little embarrassing sometimes. I wouldn't share that story at work or at a dinner party at our house or anything. I would not, but here I can share it because I know that people can relate. I knew I wasn't alone, and I knew that other people were sharing my experience, and that he didn't live that way anymore. And that was just enough of what I needed to hear. It was nothing to do with the steps. It was nothing to do with God. It was nothing to do with sponsorship. It was about wetting the bed. And it got me back that night. You know, that night I went to another meeting, and the next day I went to another meeting, and that night I went to another meeting, and I started calling people and saying, I need help. I need to go somewhere. I need a ride. And I got busy when he said, well, here's what I need you to do. You need to go to a meeting every day. Every day? You know, I'd heard that from him before in the middle of the night. No, I was busy. I was a busy guy. No way. This time I wasn't busy. I had really nothing better to do than go to a meeting every day. What it's like today is I don't look the same as when I washed up here. There's a few of you here that knew me. Or relatively new. I don't act the same. I don't do the same thing for a living anymore. I'm married to somebody else today. I've been married for going on 7 years, which is another miracle. That little four-year-old that I had that I wouldn't hang out with, is a junior at UCI now, and just a great kid, and gets good grades, and doesn't give me a wisp of, he's never had a drink of alcohol in his life, or a cigarette, or anything. Doesn't want it. Just a great kid. You know, the family's going to get the Christmas tree tonight. I started over again, and now I have a little four-year-old, so I had one driving and one teething. That was interesting, and one getting ready for grad school and one getting ready for kindergarten, you know, and keeps me young. I like to keep saying that, keeps me young. My wife has never seen me drink. I'm married to the type of woman that would probably, if she had met me 16 years ago, would have crossed the street through traffic to get away from me if she saw me coming, you know. And I'm blessed. I'm so blessed. That look is not in my mom's eyes anymore when I go down to visit my mom. You know, it's not, it is not in my mom's eyes anymore. My brother and sister and I have, we went through a hard time last year. Our mom was very, very sick, and we thought the end was near. She's almost 90. And what a blessing it was to be one of her three kids. I didn't have to be Superman and try to do more than my brother or my sister. We just kind of sat down and said, okay, here's what needs to be done. Who can do what? Let's divvy it up. And we did. And it's brought me a lot closer. I like to say that I go to 2 12-step groups. I have two kids. I work two jobs. And I have two dogs. I have one wife. And I'll keep it that way. Well, according to the Catholic Church, I still might be married to that other one. But sorry if that offended anybody. I didn't mean that. But I have a busy, full life. I'm employed today by a company who treats me very, very well, and they have no idea who I am. They've never seen me in an orange jumpsuit. They've never had to bail me out. I've never called in sick on a Monday and not really been sick. I haven't been AWOL, you know. And they reward me magically every 2 weeks. Money shows up in my checking account, and I can take care of my family, and I have health insurance. And, most nights I go to bed, I'm pretty tired, and I fall right to sleep after saying thank you, God. I'll close with this real quick. On the way here today, I was getting off the freeway, and at 17th and the 55, and I looked up, and there's a bunch of people in orange vests and helmets doing this, picking up trash on the side of the road on a Sunday. Those guys don't work for Caltrans, you know. That's I thought to myself, my God, there but for the grace of God go I, you know, because it was a little early for me to get up on a Sunday and come here and share. But things could be a lot worse on a Sunday for me, a lot worse. I'm truly blessed to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe it all to the man who was patient and 12-stepped me and introduced me to you people in Alcoholics Anonymous, which introduced me to a God of my own understanding that I don't really understand, but a God that works perfectly for me and has solved my problem. So thank you, Red, for asking me to speak today, and I thank you all. Thank you.